I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, your weekly Sex and the City podcast, where we take the questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. You are listening to Newport Soup Ladle, Dylan B. Jones, and Bimini Steak Knife, Juno Dawson. Are you impressed, Dylan? I wrote those down especially.
I made a note of Bimini Steak Knife. I was like,
what the fuck is a Bimini Steak Knife?
I was like, has Bimini Bomboulash like branched out into kitchenware? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
The ongoing global domination of Bimini. Yeah.
Although she's vegan, so it would be like a melon knife rather than a steak knife, wouldn't it?
A Bimini avocado knife.
The Bimini Satan knife, yeah. season 6, episode 9.
Yes, a woman's right to shoes.
Juno's making a face like she's okay about to throw up.
No, I just, there's a lot to get into. There is so much to unpack. The question that we are going to try and answer for you this week is,
when did we stop being free to be you and me?
Thank you, Dylan. Do you have a potted synopsis for us before we get into it?
Yes, I do. So, what most people are going to remember from this episode is Carrie's shoes going missing, Carrie's Manolos going missing from the ridiculously bougie loft baby shower that she goes to. To celebrate her friend Kira's baby. And lots of awkwardness ensues. Lots of awkward conversations. Lots of unspoken shoe-based conflict. and yeah, there's just some... Oh, I mean, yeah, we'll get into it. We meet.
It's a thorny episode. I think we might get cancelled over this episode. Let's see how we go.
Yes.
Keep going.
No, those are the, well, yeah, we'll see. We meet Dr. Robert Leeds for the first time. He moves into Miranda's building. A new love interest for Miranda, played by the beautiful Blair Underwood.
Beautiful.
I followed him on Instagram and he didn't follow me back. Sad time.
Oh, Blair Underwood. If you are listening to this, we love you. We love Dr. Robert Leeds.
Yeah.
You know, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. Please give us a follow back.
Yeah. Maybe I'll message the, I think she's coming in the next episode, the cheerleader. Maybe I'll see if she wants to come on.
Oh, rolling. Please do the seductive cheerleader. Please, love her.
And then, oh, Charlotte is having issues with teabagging. Harry's leaving teabags around her flat. Mm-hmm. And so the theme of it is her basically, like, torn between, like, wanting to let him be himself, but also being a bit of a control freak. And then Samantha, very little for Samantha this week, other than her being annoyed by children.
Although... Interestingly, yes. We're going to get into that because it raises some interesting points.
Yeah.
Let's start with Carrie, as always. Now, I said notably last week, and I said before that, in my mind, this is my least favourite episode of Sex and the City.
Mm,
I think I'm going to revise that.
Okay, interesting.
You know, I was going to invoke Dylan and I was going to say your mantra, anything but boring. And this episode is not boring. There are more boring episodes of Sex and the City than this one. In fact, there are more boring episodes of Sex and the City this season.
Yeah.
So actually, I take it all back. This is not the worst episode of Sex and the City.
Yeah, because I was watching it and I was surprised slightly. Yeah, because I thought the same thing. I was like, I'm not left feeling sort of annoyed and flat like I have been a couple of times this season.
So let's first of all get into the legal issues surrounding Carrie's stolen shoes this morning. So when you think, what does Juno Dawson do in her daily routine? Is the answer she goes down a rabbit hole online trying to work out the legal situation pertaining to a scenario where your property is stolen on someone else's property.
Yeah, because...
That's what I did today, Dylan.
Well, I'm glad you did that because I've actually got it as a question, and this is why we do a podcast together. I've got it as a question in my notes because just a quick recap. So Carrie goes to her friend's party. Her friend makes her take her shoes off at the door. When Carrie goes to leave, the shoes are gone. Someone's taken the shoes. And then Carrie is talking to the ladies about it afterwards. And Miranda says, well, legally, your friend should pay for them. And I was like, is that true?
Well, first and foremost, Carrie's shoes would probably be covered under their home's contents insurance. So actually, Kira, as that is the actress played by Tatum O'Neill, who we're going to get into in a bit as well, Kira should be insured, so she would probably have to file a crime number to say that they had been stolen, but actually her insurance should cover it. Carrie's shoes in 2002 cost $485. I think Manila's would probably be a little bit more now.
Just a bit, yeah.
A designer shoe now usually costs in the region of £600-700.
Yeah.
I find that is a wild amount of money to spend on shoes. Have you ever spent that much on shoes, Dylan?
No, I'm actually, not to like blow my own trumpet or anything, but I actually don't spend that much money on like material things. Like most of my clothes are from like other people or...
Okay, Oliver Twist. I spend a fortune, all right?
And most of my clothes are from like... other people or like charity shops or, and I'm not one to buy like, I can honestly say I don't own anything that cost me more than £100.
I do because
I'm not knocking it. Like I'm not knocking, like totally if you can do it, like treat yourself completely. But I think it's something I don't know. I've just never done that.
I caught the disease from Sex and the City. You know, yeah. Fergie told me, I go shopping for labels, I go shopping for love. And then I did. I like that now I'm in a position where I can sort of splurge on nice things.
Yeah.
Because for the longest time I couldn't. Like I've said it before, I didn't go on holiday for about 20 years because I couldn't afford to. You know, kind of, now... can, and as well I do kind of see it slightly being part of my job. You know, I realized when I started going to sort of events where people are going to take your picture that there is that who are you wearing moment where it's nice to say, oh, it's vintage Prada, or oh, it's, you know, it's Vivian Westwood or whatever. You know, it's nice to be able to do that, and it is a status thing, it's an ego thing. It's stupid, it's obscene. I've never spent that much on shoes, but I have spent that much and more on handbags. Although, as I tell my husband, my Chanel handbag is an investment piece and it will only get more expensive with time.
That's true. So... Chanel. It's like a Chanel suit. It never goes out of style.
Like Marge Simpson, I will be stitching that handbag forever.
I don't think it's like stupid or obscene. And this ties, like, if it makes you feel good about yourself and it's not doing anyone any harm, like, fill your boots, do it. And this ties into what Kira fucking says to Carrie when she's like, I shouldn't have to pay for your extravagant lifestyle. Who says, like, and this is very Samantha of me, like, who says, like, spending money on a bag is, like, more or less valid than spending money on a baby that you've chosen to have?
Right. Well, let's okay.
Let's just
cancellation point number one. Martin, please insert some sort of klaxon siren. The easily offended might wish to look away now, because bringing a baby into the world is an enormous financial burden, but also an environmental burden as well. You know, kind of the world is massively overpopulated. It's, you know, you're right. And this episode, so the crux of this whole episode is, why are some women's choices celebrated more than other women's choices? Mm. Kira has chosen to have three children with made up names. Actually,
oh yeah, Allegra.
People out there listening with children called Milo and Allegra. I used to be a teacher in Brighton. Those names aren't as original as you think they are. It's just, I'll just put that one out there. Just put that one out there. We're so doomed, Dylan. You and I. Change your name, change your identity, leave the city.
We should preface this by saying, like, we don't judge, we don't judge people at all for having kids.
No.
But in the, like, for the purposes of this comparison, it's a very interesting thing that Sex and the City raises. And Carrie says it to Charlotte. She says, because Carrie and Charlotte are discussing, like, getting presents for baby showers versus why do single people not get presents for things? And Carrie's like, I loved her. And this is when I loved her, actually, in this episode. She was like, I'm all for, like, celebrating these amazing milestones in your life. But, like, where's my parade, basically, is what she's saying.
Yeah.
And it's quite a queer thing.
I'm going to say she's straight as well. She doesn't even get pride.
Yeah, well, yeah. But it's
when is it straight pride, Dylan?
But it's something that, like, yeah. It's where's the cis male pride? It's something that queer people experience a lot. Like, because a lot of us don't reach the traditional heteronormative milestones. So, yeah.
And I think, so what, the flip side of any good that Carrie does in this episode is somewhat offset by the ongoing Carrie issue that she's completely self-involved at all times. She's not going to let it go. For me, it's the scene at brunch. Maybe they were filming it at the end of a very long day, but they all look so sick of her shit.
Yeah.
When she's just, you just, and you can see that she's in like the fourth hour of talking about her shoe and kind of Samantha losing the will to live. Kind of.
I mean, probably just Kim Cattrall losing the will to live at that point. There's an amazing, where is it in my notes? There's an amazing Kim Cattrall moment. Oh, we can get to that later. It's about teabagging.
Okay. Well, teabagging. We'll put a pin in it for part two.
Yeah. But Kira Bronson was... I was impressed by how much I hated her. Like, that's a great character. And very well played by the actor.
So let's talk about Tatum O'Neill.
Yeah.
Still the youngest person to ever win an Oscar.
Nice. Yeah.
Yep. A very troubled character. I've been fascinated by Tatum O'Neill pretty much since this episode. I remember when it came out, like, it was like special guest star Tatum O'Neill, and I'd not really heard of her. I was like, why should I care about special guest star Tatum O'Neill? And so even back then, I was really interested in who is this woman. She's been friends with Sarah Jessica Parker, both child actors during the 80s.
Oh, wow.
So they kind of came up together. She was 9 when she filmed the film that won her the Oscar.
Wow.
She's a Nepo baby. Her father is Ryan O'Neill, who was a very famous Hollywood actor. And she later claimed in a memoir that she was sexually assaulted as a child by her father's drug dealer. And her life has been plagued by addiction problems. Tatum was arrested buying crack cocaine in 2008. So that's actually after she recorded Sex and the City. She has since gotten clean and sober. But yeah, just really troubled. Very high profile, the first girlfriend of Michael Jackson.
Oh my God.
Michael Jackson claimed in his infamous Martin Bashir, boo, cancelled, in his Martin Bashir interview that Tatum O'Neill aggressively tried to have sex with him, but he was scared of sex. Tatum O'Neill completely denies this ever happened. Suggesting it was much more of a showmance than it was like a real thing. So yeah, Tatum O'Neill, fuck, she has lived
Do you know what?
Life.
I'm going to excuse her wanting people to take their shoes off at the door now after hearing all that.
It's the least we can do for Keira Bronson.
Wow, though. Shout out to, like, amazing. What an amazing woman.
Just again, one of those, it feels like she's one of those people, like, dark side of Hollywood victims.
Yes.
Kind of, that, you know, that it's, you know, obviously there's a lot of conversation about Nepo babies right now, but I think for a lot of the benefits having rich and famous parents can get you, there is that kind of flip side where you've lived this completely heightened existence.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, look at like Willow and Jaden Smith. Like,
yeah.
They cannot function as normal human beings because they were born into a completely alien situation.
Yeah, and also, like, it's hard enough having, like, I don't know, like a sibling or a best friend who's super famous and feeling overshadowed by that. But imagine if it's your
parents. Is that how you feel about me?
That's exactly how I feel. But yeah, like, imagine if it's your parents. Like, what does that do to your head and your, like, feelings of self-worth?
I mean, she didn't stand a chance. However, I do think she plays Keira with a level of frostiness.
Yes.
That's quite admirable because nobody wants to be a bitch on television.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, I played like a crazed thief on Holby City, but I was still kind of like, but how can we make her likable? Whereas I like literally stabbed someone and I was like, yeah, but why did she stab
What about him? What about if she only steals from big corporations?
Yeah, kind of. In the end, it was just to fund facial feminization surgery. Well,
I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah, right? Who hasn't? But I thought. Well, I quite liked that kind of Tatum O'Neal came in and was like, I'm just going to play this real kind of cow.
Yeah.
Who, we understand that, you know, she's got three kids, including a very small child. But there is an air of just kind of aloof detachment about Keira that I really like.
Yeah, when Carrie calls her to do this big, like, apology discussion, and Kira's like, oh, I'd forgotten all about that. It's just like, oh, you're a nasty bitch. And as Miranda says, like, she's a fucking bitch.
Maybe Keira is just a fucking bitch. Yeah. There's a different side question, listeners. Are there some people in this world who are just a fucking bitch? There's a question that they never asked on Sex and the City.
But she's written so well as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I caught a little aside when she was talking to someone at the party, and you just, like, Carrie's, like, the camera's focused on Carrie, but you hear Keira saying, like, oh yes, and then the landscaper ran off with all of our trees. It's just like,
do you know what they should do? They should have filmed, like, a B-side to this episode that is, like, you know how they were at Twilight from Edward's perspective?
Yeah.
They should have done this episode from Keira's perspective, where she's like, this fucking woman who I've barely seen since 1995 will not fucking stop going on about her shoe. Like, this woman is obsessed with her shoe. Like, you just see her at brunch with her friend. It's going like, this woman keeps ringing me about her shoes.
And then the,
like,
phone
should
rings.
I recommend a therapist?
The phone rings and she's like, oh my God, it's her again. And Keira could be played by Tommy Doe.
Oh God, yes.
So in general, what do we think about taking shoes off when you come into someone's house? How do we feel about that?
Again, women's rights to shoes. If I lived in a house where I had chosen to install pale coloured carpets, yes, I would get people to take their shoes off. But then again, that's what you're doing is you're asking people to take their shoes off. Like, if you're okay to take your shoes off, please take your shoes off. Like, I wouldn't force someone. And the reason's bullshit. Like, bringing in germs on your shoes, fuck off. Children, as Miranda says, children are covered in crap. Like, I have seen, you know, my friend, hi, shout out to Olivia, my friend bought her baby round the other day. You know, this baby has just started crawling, you know, picking up the dog's toys, and I was like, oh, that's been in my dog's mouth. And Olivia was like, children are disgusting. Don't worry about it. It's probably good for his immune system.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. I think my view with shoes is I don't mind taking my shoes off. Like, if I just go to, like, a friend's house and they're like, oh, can you take your shoes off? I don't like it. I actually, because I'm like Harry, like, I like a boot with a trouser. Like, shoes are, like, part of my look. So I don't like
very
it.
Much.
But it's their house. I'm at their house. I'm going to do what they ask. But I do think the reason Kira was at fault is if you have an issue with people wearing shoes in your house, don't have a party at your house. Like, right. Have a party at a bar or something. Mm-hmm. I've been to a couple of parties where the party in Sex and the City, where, like, everyone's had to take their shoes off, and it feels absurd.
It's strangely infantilizing as well.
Yeah.
Like, padding around in socks.
Yeah,
feels weird. Childlike somehow. Kind of.
Yeah, and it takes all the kind of glamour and excitement out of the party for me. I'm like, oh, I should just be sort of like sat on the sofa watching a movie then. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
We have here a legal precedent where Kira is responsible for Carrie's shoes.
Mm.
Just claim on your insurance. Two, Carrie is obsessed, but I'm almost kind of... I have a begrudging respect for how she refuses to let it go. And the worst bit for me is when Kira says, I'll give you $200.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what they cost.
Yeah.
So, no.
In fact, it's half what they cost.
Yeah. Like, mad behaviour. Like, possibly let's... possibly had Kira argued, look, you chose to wear exceptionally expensive shoes in public. Let's not forget, Carrie has already been mugged for her shoes once. Like, the woman doesn't learn.
This is the second
time her shoes get stolen.
Yeah, and then, oh God, and then and just like that, they get ruined in the shower. Her beautiful blue ones get ruined when Big dies.
Oh, yes.
So Manolo's
And Pete chews her shoe as well. Aiden's dog chews one of her Manolos as well.
Does someone's water break on her Manolos?
Yep. Miranda's water. Wow, this woman does talk about her shoes a lot. Okay, so Carrie does have a shoe issue. So that's...
But we know this.
And Kira and her friends are right.
We know this, though. We've always known this about Carrie.
Yeah. Because some of my handbags cost more than Carrie's shoes. And if... Yeah, I would want... I don't know if I would expect my friend to pay for it. But what I would say, what I guess I would have said to Kira is, these shoes were really expensive and somebody has stolen them.
Mm.
You know, so either you need to track down where my shoes have gone, or I'm going to have to get the police involved for insurance purposes. So Carrie's initial response of, you need to pay for the shoes, feels a little knee-jerk, I guess.
Yeah, I did think... as well, like, could they really not track down who? Because it wasn't like it was a crazy house party, like, where there were just loads of randoms there. Like, it was her baby shower, so it was presumably all people who she knew. So
send
I think
a group email. Send an email.
Yeah. That's what I have actually seen happen a couple of times now. Is like in the WhatsApp group or even on Instagram, close friend stories. Someone will be like, mm-hmm. "Oh, has anyone seen this jacket from?" Has anyone, you know, did anyone lose a jacket or whatever? Yeah.
I don't know. So there we go. Yeah. Carrie, in the end, what do we think about her extreme solution, which is she tells Kira she is getting married to herself, sets up a bridal registry at Manala Blahnik with one item on it, which she forces Kira to buy for her. She shames Kira into action. Let's be honest, that is absolutely what she does. She reminds Kira that Kira has previously registered for both wedding gifts and presumably three lots of baby shower gifts. And now Carrie wants her capitalist revenge.
Do you know what? Ridiculous behaviour, but I enjoyed it, to be honest.
I mean, there's something quite chic about it.
Yeah.
Like, the delivery of it is like heat-seeking missile efficient, kind of. Like,
just I'm registered here.
$85. Yeah. And I must admit, I do especially love the casting of the woman who works at Manolo Blahnik.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes think they just hire models to make you feel worse about your life.
Yeah.
Like when you're in there trying on something that just looks hideous on your real woman body, and then Christy Turlington floats and goes, how are you getting on in there? How do you think, Christy? I look like a bag of popcorn fresh out the microwave.
Oh my God, that reminds me. When I was in, when I went into Vivienne Westwood in central London to buy my Vivienne Westwood trousers, which are, I think, which are the £100, that they were like 90 quid or something. Mm-hmm. So they're one of the most expensive things I have. The French, very sort of feminine gay shop assistant, I'm assuming gay, sort of, I was wearing like camouflage trousers and just like a slightly grubby white t-shirt. And he'd like spun around with a hanger and just like looked me up and down. And honestly, I felt like Anne Hathaway in The Devil Wears Prada when Meryl Streep.
Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman.
Yeah, it was very that.
I don't think
that.
We have anything for you here.
Yeah, it was very that. And do you know what? I loved it. I loved that these things actually do happen in real life and not just in films. Yeah.
So yeah, she gets her dreadful revenge. It's fine. She gets her fucking horrible shoes. That's the punchline. Welcome to your horrible shoe. Must admit, I don't particularly like Manuela Blahnik's shoes.
Oh, interesting.
I prefer a Jimmy Choo. I prefer a Christian Louboutin. I'm not a big fan of. I think I don't really get it. Mm. But she gets them, and off she scurries down the street. I like that she. In the end, she pairs them with like a pair of combat pants.
Yeah,
like,
nice.
To scurry through Manhattan. She doesn't. I don't know how I feel about the monologue, which is it's really hard to walk in a woman's shoes. So sometimes it's nice to have a really good pair.
Oh yeah, that was nonsense. That was like the writers at the end being like, "How do we wrap this up? Let's just put in some like noughties rom-com nonsense."
Garbage.
Yeah.
It's funny. Sex in the City. It's strange how. That period of time, and it's obviously they continue to do it on Just Like That, which is to show to show human women existing in heels.
Yeah.
Which, A, very not fashionable. I mean, I know all of fashion exists in cycles, but high heels, even if you look at runways, you're not seeing a lot of models wearing stilettos right now, except Saint Laurent, who continues to dress women like, well, just they're not women. Yves Saint Laurent do not make clothes for women. They make clothes for
mannequins,
models, basically.
Right.
Yeah, for mannequins. Yeah.
Right, right.
But other than that, you're not really going to see a lot of heels. But I think, given how young I was, and because I was pre-transitioned the first time I watched Sex and the City, I led to believe that wearing a heel was something that women might choose to do.
Mm.
Nah. Hot, painful, actual pain.
Mm.
And people who tell you they don't feel it anymore. No, it hurts.
Or like you've said, I think you said before, like maybe the reason they don't feel it anymore is because their foot is literally like just turned to mush.
A cloven hoof. Yeah. Possibly you can get Botox in your feet as well so you don't feel it so much. But if you're having injections in your feet so that you can wear a pair of shoes. I think the pandemic as well, I think... I'm enjoying returning to glamour post-pandemic. That's always nice. You know, for 18 months, we didn't really get a chance to dress up. But still, I wouldn't sacrifice an evening, again, to wearing a heel.
Wow.
I'm going to an award ceremony tonight, actually. I'm going to take some trainers in my bag.
Nice.
Always, so I can have a dance.
I always thought if I wore women's clothes, I'd wear like a sort of goth boot, like Effie from Skins, like a goth boot and a net stocking, and then like a sort of torn up, flame burned looking dress with it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, so that's a good look. I think that is a practical look. And I think by the time And Just Like That came around, at least Cynthia Nixon's costume felt representative of what a New York woman would wear. She never looked anything less than chic, but she wasn't pottering around Manhattan in a 4-inch heel.
I'm trying to think.
Mad.
I'm trying to think walking around London. You do see women in heels, but not a lot at all. Like,
no.
If you're walking through, like, Kensington and Chelsea, the chances are you'll see, like, a couple of women in heels.
And especially around the city where you've got people who want to look professional. But very often, if you're on the tube, you'll see a woman dressed very, very smartly wearing a trainer or a flat shoe, and then she's got her heels in her handbag,
yeah. kind of.
Which, again, because they're very uncomfortable. I think SJP, if we were to somehow get SJP on the podcast, it could happen, you don't know. I think she would defend it. I think she is one of those women who says that any discomfort she feels is outweighed by the fact she likes the look.
Yeah.
And again, it's a woman's right to choose.
It is.
And I think, I must admit, I think that's one of the things that bugs me about this episode, which is it is a play on women's right to choose, which is forever tied to the ongoing battle for reproductive rights.
Particularly now.
So to make it about shoes feels like it's cheapening a really important feminist issue as well.
Yeah, like, it just doesn't sit well on the tongue now, does it, at all?
No. But that said, it's got us having a conversation about women's choices and
that's
about
true.
How the autonomy of women is more important than anything else. And actually, Carrie is a woman who has had an abortion, we know, because there was a whole episode about it.
Mm.
She chose shoes over babies.
Yeah.
So actually, it is a woman's right to choose.
Yeah.
There was something quite glib about it that just kind of was a bit like, meh.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just simple as the fact that, like, if this was coming out today, this episode is never in a million years going to be called that.
No, like, probably not.
It's a product
of... I mean, because HBO, it's meant to be provocative, so...
Yeah, true.
Okay, I'm sick of talking about shoes.
Yeah.
Much like her friends at brunch, I cannot listen to Carrie talk about shoes anymore. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about teabagging, Dr. Robert Leeds, and that Seamus with his fucking pasta. All right, see you in a sec.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello. Welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. We're talking about season 6, episode...
9.
Something.
9.
A Woman's Right to Shoes. Episode 9? 9? Are we up to episode 9 already? Oh, wow. Okay. A Woman's Right to Shoes. Let's talk about Dr. Robert Leeds.
Yes.
Do you want to know my little factette I have found out about Dr. Robert Leeds?
Oh, I've got some as well. Maybe we have got the same one.
We got the same factette.
You go first.
Go on, you go first with your factette.
Okay, so it's from an interview in Vulture.
We've got the same factette, Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
So interesting. So he was originally... Well, he never was originally going to be this character, but... the executive producers of Sex and the City first got in touch with him to extend an invitation to me. This is a quote from him. An invitation to me a few years prior in the episode about Kim Cattrall's character dating a black man because she was curious about it. I was respectfully...
Siobhan.
Yes. And then he goes on to say, I was respectfully not interested in being the curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it was. The interview was picked up in a few outlets, and basically he was very aware of the kind of objectification of black men.
Yeah.
Apparently there was originally a line in the script where Samantha asked him about his penis size, which is obviously very racially loaded.
And
good on Blair Underwood for saying no to that nonsense. And obviously we had Candice Carty-Williams on that episode, and it was bullshit.
But he goes on to say in the interview that he was very happy with this storyline.
Yes.
And felt very comfortable on set, and very comfortable with the crew, and loved Cynthia Nixon, which is, mm-hmm. I was glad when I found the interview because it's answered like a lot of questions that I think we would have had.
I think there's a comparison to be made by Blair Underwood's Dr. Robert Leeds and the character of Charlie in Friends, as played by Aisha Tyler.
She dated... Does she date Ross?
She dates Ross and Joey in the latter seasons.
Okay.
It's really interesting. So this, I wonder if this was like a cultural moment where there was obviously a conversation about the representation of black characters on television.
Mm.
Both Charlie and Dr. Robert Leeds are doctors. Charlie's a paleontologist. And so I think it's good to see black people given professional upper middle class roles. But at the same time, there was a straight, it was a, do you know what it was? It was peak We Don't See Colour territory.
Yes. Yes.
So very little of the trajectories of either of those characters explores what it's like to function as a black person in a very white environment.
Yeah.
So like Charlie is the only black paleontologist we see. Dr. Robert really is like the only significant black character in the original run of Sex and the City until we get to Jennifer Hudson in the movie.
Yeah, I think he's the only black character who's in more than one episode.
Yeah, I strongly suspect that's true.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, Louise does get a bit of a backstory in the movie, but what Robert doesn't talk about is being black.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, he does it, of course, like all the men in Sex and the City. He exists to further Miranda's storyline.
Yeah.
But it's I think now, and obviously we saw this when it came to And Just Like That, there would have been a conversation about what it's like as a black person to exist in that very stiflingly white sort of situation. And it was explored in that episode that we both found quite excruciating, the Charlotte's dinner party episode.
But this...
Do you know what I need to do? I need to rewatch And Just Like That. I need to revise it ahead of season two. But
And also, I don't know if this episode that we're recording now, I don't know if this is going to be... I mean, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But I thought, I'm interested to know what you think of this, and also interested to know what listeners, black listeners in particular, think of this. Mm-hmm. I thought that this episode, in a very brief scene, dealt with issues that you said just now about him feeling stifled in a very white environment. There was a very brief line that I thought dealt with it much more deftly than And Just Like That does. When
is that Miranda's...
Yeah, so
the board, yeah.
Yeah, when the co-op board, is that, yeah. They're all a bunch of fusty old white people, and they're all discussing whether or not to allow Robert Leeds to live in the building. And someone says, like, oh, these young people, they always have parties and loud music. And Miranda says, I think we all know what's not being said here. I didn't mind that line. But then in the voiceover, Carrie says, what wasn't being said was Miranda was horny. Which that I didn't mind that, and it felt like realistic, like those kind of euphemisms are used.
I think that is literally a white woman playing the race card, which is
that's true.
Listeners think about that, but she certainly leverages Robert's race to get what she wants.
That's true,
which is
actually
a new love interest.
Yeah.
But again, we can't, a bit like with Harry's Jewishness, we don't know how Harry perceives his faith.
Yeah.
Because no, we never ask him, you know, the men of Sex and the City are ciphers, you know, and certainly Robert is an improvement on the Siobhan character. And actually the Siobhan character is and we only meet him once, but he was a more nuanced character than his sister, who unfortunately got the angry black woman.
Yeah, he was
thrust upon him.
Actually, you're right. He himself was a great character, and quite an interesting
character.
And
one wonders if Blair Underwood's reaction to that. I mean, obviously, he didn't upset the casting director because he was invited back 3 years later.
Mm.
But one wonders if once that script was out in the world, they adjusted the character of Siobhan to make him less sort of caricatured, kind of.
Yeah.
But no, for me, the Adina character in that episode was the one who was far more problematic. But I'm glad Robert's there. I don't know why a New York Knicks doctor is dabbing calamine lotion on an adult woman.
On a chicken
He must
pot.
Really fancy Miranda.
Oh my God, we get Jules and Mimi again as well.
Jules and Mimi, yay!
We get some dialogue. What's a few tube stops between friends? I really enjoyed.
You're so soft.
And then Miranda says, when she's telling Robert about it, she says, Jules may be involved with the girl who works in the sausage shop. The sausage shop? Is that a thing?
Does she mean like the butchers?
I think she means
Do they have butchers in New York?
They must do, like a deli butcher
thing. What show did you say it was allegedly based on?
I can't remember the name of it, but that Russell T Davies one with Alan.
Oh, Bob and Rose.
Yeah.
Which I think is filmed in Manchester, so maybe that's where, maybe one of them's a factory worker or something.
Yeah. What else? But I did really like it when that like awkward moment when Jules and Mimi start
excruciating.
Yeah, and it was really good when Jules and Mimi start shagging and they're both just sort of sitting there watching.
Like... The only similar thing that I can relate that to is when I accidentally watched Black Swan with my mother.
Oh my God, so did I.
That's
not with
so
your
niche.
Mother, with my mother.
There was just like a frosty silence as there's quite an explicit lesbian sex scene with Natalie Portman and Mila Kunis. Just me and my mum like,
me and my mum saw it in the cinema. Yeah, because she likes ballet and
you like swans, she likes ballet. Yeah.
Yeah, little did we know. That was, it's a great film though.
Oh yeah, I love it. It's best Darren Aronofsky. Oh no, Requiem for a Dream, then Black Swan.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. That was Art Corner. And so I got to thinking, who knew? Darren Aronofsky film recommendations. Just get a podcast that can give you everything. Let's talk about teabagging.
Yes.
And then we'll finish off with a debate about children in public spaces.
Oh God, yeah.
Okay, so teabagging, lol, the scene, worth it. This whole episode is worth it for Samantha's very po-faced advice to Charlotte. Just breathe through your nose.
And that whole scene was great. Like, all of their chemistry was great when Miranda's like, oh, I see, because of the dipping.
Although, again, did you see Carrie wilting sex columnist Carrie Bradshaw hiding behind a menu? Oh, now I've lost my appetite. Oh, what does she write about in her column?
We need some, I mean, oh, I don't know. We have already had validation when I think from Samantha, when Samantha like finally says to her, like, you need to be less of a prude or something, doesn't she, in season three? But yeah, my God.
But God love old Evan Handler. Just padding around stark bollock naked. Amazing.
Yeah, love it. Just... And that little wave he did to her as he was like leaving the room naked, like the wiggle.
I adore Harry Goldenblatt.
Oh, yeah.
Just if they Steve Harry Goldenblatt in And Just Like That, I'm coming for them. I love that nudity is such a theme, because obviously then we had the blowjob in And Just Like That as well.
Oh my God!
Checking to see if he had cancer.
I forgot about that. Jesus, I just got a very
Wasn't
vivid.
Wasn't there a prosthetic penis involved?
There was quite a sizable one.
Yeah,
I just got a very vivid flashback to that. The tea bags. It's nice. it's quite lovely with Charlotte. She's really nice to him. And she's grown since the days of him putting on the baseball when she made her Shabbat dinner and her, like, mm-hmm. absolutely losing the plot. And
she lost him once.
Yeah. And she in a very measured way, says, I really want you to be yourself and I don't want to nag, but please can you do this? Yeah.
It's a bit of a reach around for us to accept that Harry has not been living with Charlotte for a very long time.
Mm.
It seems odd to me that they've only moved in together after a wedding.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's quite sort of 50s, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, okay, let's round out this episode. When did we stop being free to be you and me? Well, I don't know if we can answer that question because we live under a conservative government and we have done for about 15 years. So it's
more pertinent. More pertinent might be when will we, or more accurately, when in particular you be free to be you?
Yeah. But so let's instead end with a potential political hot potato of small children in adult spaces, which I think is going to get our message boards lighting up like a Christmas tree. I don't know how I feel about this. Genuinely, I think it's a bit like, you know, sometimes you go into a pub or a bar or a cafe and it says well-behaved dogs welcome. Same should apply to children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cancelled, Claxon. Are you calling my child a dog? No.
I'm going to be very careful because I'm going to end up like Samantha when she has that rant. Mm-hmm. And I think we have spoken about this before, a couple of seasons ago. I think there should be both things. So there should be spaces where children are welcome and there should be spaces that are adult only. Mm. And to be fair, there are. Nightclubs are adult only.
Yeah.
It's interesting, there's a pub near me that has a section that is adults only. Mm-hmm. And I went in there with some friends once and we were deathly hungover and we saw, great, there's an adults only section. And we sat down and someone's kid ran into the adults only section and proceeded to bang on the legs of the tables with a little wooden toy that he had relentlessly. And we could see his parent, just watching him in full view of the adults only sign. And it's at times like that that I get on my high horse.
Did the child throw some pesto at you?
No, although that pesto looked good.
It did look delicious. Yeah. It made me really hungry. I agree, Max and I only book adult-only holiday hotels.
Yes.
Want to see children when I'm sat around a pool. I want to sit and read the latest on a tart or similar without seeing kids screaming and jumping on Lilas and shit. And again, that's such a woman's right to choose. I choose to go to adult-only holiday resorts and I would highly recommend it. That said, now I'm going to completely contradict myself. I think it's really good for children to be socialized around adults. It's really, really normal in the Mediterranean, in Italy, Greece, France, Spain. Children are expected and trained from a very young age to sit at a dining table and converse with adults on an adult level. And I think that's really good training for adult life. I think, so when I was a kid, we were sort of sent off to play in the children's area, kind of go away from the adults. The adults talking, you go away. And then when I became a teenager and I was expected to do things like work experience and get part-time jobs, I found talking to grown-ups really, really difficult. I didn't even like talking to teachers. It was a skill that I just fundamentally lacked.
Interesting.
And so I see with some of my friends, you know, when children are included, those children just seem better adjusted to adult life. It feels they've been given this skill, a really important life skill. But I also think it's really important to have boundaries. So I think there are times that should just be for adults, kind of.
Yeah.
But I think for me, you know, I went out, like I said, my friend brought her child, very small child, down. And, you know, of course I don't want to go and sit in, I don't want to name a like a child-friendly restaurant for lunch. Olivia and I wanted to have a nice lunch, so we went to a nice restaurant, and her baby was immaculately well-behaved. Mm. Sat in a high chair, had a bit of her food. Perfect. And that's because the child was used to it. You know, yeah. Even at 1 year old, you know, kind of.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a bit of a... you've raised a bit of a interesting conundrum there, because if you don't socialise children with adults, they're going to be the sort of children, potentially, that cause issues in adult spaces. Mm-hmm. So you have to bring the children into the adult space in order for them to behave in the adult space.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? I remember we were trained as children in Little Chef.
Yes.
Which I think has gone now. But the difference was, right, yes, when we go to McDonald's, yes, do what you want. It's going to be carnage.
Yeah.
But when we go to Little Chef, you have to sit at the table until everybody has finished their meal. Doesn't matter how boring it is. Of course, at the time, we didn't even have devices.
Yeah.
You know, we just used to have to sit and talk.
Yeah.
And good, because we learn, you know, we learn how to do that, and we could do that. But no, it is... I also completely understand Samantha's perspective that screaming, banging, no. And that one is on, that's not nothing to do with a parent's right to choose whether or not to have children. It is, however, poor parenting.
Yeah.
There, I said it.
I loved...
Oh, we're going to get cancelled. Sorry, Dylan, you're in charge of the Instagram. Good luck.
I loved just amazing Kim Cattrall. As always, when she's just got the pesto spaghetti sliding down her
trying
suit.
To leave in a dignified yes. way, and covered says, well, in spaghetti.
Well, I've made my point and he's made his.
And the mum is bad parenting. The mum, you know, the mum failed to yeah. properly sanction that child.
Yeah.
And to that mother, I say good luck. Because when your child is 15 and, you know, it stops being cute, you didn't set boundaries or establish the correct way to behave in public. So in the end, it's the parent, you know, you reap what you sow, I think, in terms of poor parenting.
For sure.
Again, Juna, child-free woman.
Waxing lyrical.
Getting red for filth. Yeah. No, parenting is fucking difficult.
Yeah.
So hard. Do you know that? And that's why I have chosen not to do it.
Yeah.
And it was a choice. Even as a trans woman, I have chosen not to adopt or use surrogacy. I have chosen not to have children because it looks like just the hardest thing in the world, and it looks exhausting and it's difficult. So it is. And children misbehave.
Yeah.
And even with the best parenting in the world, children misbehave. So it's a really, really difficult one.
Particularly at the moment in the Cosy Lives, I read a really like sort of, you know, when you read headlines sometimes and you just say, think, oh my God, like apparently some of the most stolen, the most shoplifted things from supermarkets at the moment are nappies and Calpol.
Yeah, I saw
so,
that,
yeah. Yeah, so shout out.
If you see somebody stealing Calpol or nappies, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Just let it go.
Look the other way for sure. Mm-hmm. I have some very quick listener messages.
Oh, best thing.
Yeah, before I forget. They are both, this is a few weeks ago now, but still pertinent. And it's in response to, I think, us and Rachel, when we were talking about the Judaism storylines, did a shout out. And we've had a couple of replies.
Oh, excellent. We love it when listeners get in touch.
Yeah. So this is from Eliana in New York. And
amazing.
She says, hello, Juno and Dylan. I am Jewish and from the Upper West Side of NYC. I have often contemplated how this season depicts NYC Jewish culture. It's such a complex identity with a huge amount of differentiation and nuance. I think the show best represented some of my niche experiences with an episode back in season 2, where Carrie dates the Jewish writer with the great family. Remember, Justin Theroux, the Shortcomings episode.
Yeah.
To me, the music and constant Jewish puns of season 6 do feel a bit othering, but there are moments that feel familiar too, like the conversion plotline. My mum, like Charlotte, converted. I think what saves it is that Harry feels like a fleshed out person who is both soft, strong, and grounded in security and self-love. I can't speak of all Jewish folks or NYC Jews, just speaking from my own lived experience. Thanks for the great podcast.
And thank you, Eliana, for being part of the podcast.
Yeah, great message. And then we also had a message about, do you remember we were saying, can you make raw ravioli?
Oh, yeah.
when Samantha meets Smith Jarrett at the Raw, someone has said, the raw ravioli. It could be that it's not pasta at all, but very thinly sliced veg, like kohlrabi, fused together with a filling inside. It's the only way I can think to do raw ravioli.
I don't want to eat that either.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Please keep your messages coming in. As always, Dylan will be manning the inbox.
Yeah.
Okay, next week, it's time, Dylan.
Here we go.
It's time. My best episode of all time ever.
Me
Samantha
too.
Samantha Jones being misted with Evian. What else can you do? That's right. Jerry Horner, knee Harrywell, makes her Sex and the City debut.
Oh my God. As does David Duchovny.
I'm so freaking excited. Miss Bronstein is from Sussex, as am I.
Round up the waiter and have him tally up the drinks.
Oh God, I cannot wait.
Amazing.
Cool. We will see you next week for the best episode of all time ever. Join us.
Bye.
Take care. Bye for now.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.